Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 115, Existential Humanistic Psychotherapy and Education, October 14, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
I believe, and I have had the experience, I have had a near-death experience in a car accident, that life goes in another form. And it's a beautiful form. The only thing that's really missing is the physical body and the physical touch of people you love and care for. But you go on. I truly believe you go on. You have work to do, and you do it at a different level. And I feel I'm being guided and taught by all those that have gone before me. I think there's a very, very thin veil from being in the body and out of the body. And we have to take very good care of this gift of being here.
That was the voice of my colleague and guest, Dr. Myrtle Heary. Myrtle Heary, PhD and MFT, is Associate Professor of Psychology at Sonoma State University in Rohnert Park, California, and she's also adjunct faculty at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology in Palo Alto, California. She's taught at both universities for 8 years, mentoring master's and doctoral students of psychology, as well as organizing, sustaining, and leading groups. In addition, she's director of the International Institute of Humanistic Studies, through which she offers 2-year training programs nationally and internationally for helping professionals. This training leads to certification of in-depth communication in both individual and group settings. She gives day-long introductory trainings across the U.S., including Arizona, California, and Texas. She's in private practice in Petaluma, California, leading consultation groups for therapists and seeing individuals, couples, and families, and leading annual retreats for mothers. Myrtle also volunteers for Petaluma Hospice Bereavement, helping individuals and leading groups. She's published papers and chapters in psychology journals and books on bereavement, existential humanistic and transpersonal psychotherapy, and psychology. In addition, she was also a contributing editor and published in the Yoga Journal and studied and taught extensively with James F.T. Bugenthal, Ph.D., who was first president of the Association of Humanistic Psychology. Now, here's the interview. Myrtle Heary, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you, David, for inviting me to be a part of this wonderful cutting-edge phenomenon for psychology.
Well, you and I have known each other for a while now, and I'm trying to remember when we first met. My recollection is that it was while I was chair of the psychology department at Sonoma State. Is that right?
That is true. I came to your office and asked basically for a job, and you gave me a job.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I don't think it was right away, though, was it?
No, it was not. It was a process of your skills of networking me with the right department in the right place at the right time.
Well, I remember that one of the points of connection for us was that both you and I have been greatly influenced by the work of Dr. James F.T. Bugenthal, who you and I know as Jim Bugenthal, and who unfortunately has retired due to age and ill health. He pioneered an approach that he referred to as existential humanistic psychotherapy, and I was very influenced by his books, and I served for a time on his board of directors. Now, how did you come to know his work?
I came to know his work in a very idiosyncratic way. I was a doctoral student at the California Institute of Integral Studies back in the 1980s, and I basically was tired of driving so much for getting good supervision, and I asked a very dear friend of mine who used to be a professor at Sonoma State, Ann Dreyfus, if she knew anyone locally that was really good. She said yes, and she gave me Jim's name. Jim picked up the phone. I went to visit him, and I basically started supervision with him in the early 80s and had a wonderful, wonderful mentor-mentee relationship with him concerning existential humanistic psychology.
And I think in some ways you've sort of taken on his mantle now that he's retired. Would that be fair to say?
That would be fair to say, and many others have also. There are many students that Jim has touched during his career, and I being one of them. I did teach with him for many years as his assistant, so I feel like I got a pretty close look at how he views psychology and psychotherapy and took off with my interest. The one thing I learned the most from him was to honor and respect individual voices, which he did with me also. So my voice is mine, certainly with an influence of his teaching, but it is my voice. So that's influenced my teaching and who I am as a psychotherapist also.
Well, I'm really hoping that his work doesn't get lost in the march of time. And, you know, so many new books come out every year. And as I say, I think his books were extremely important. And I wonder if you can tell our audience anything, or just tell a bit about the approach that he called existential humanistic approach.
Absolutely. The thesis is basic. It's very basic. It's what's coming around now in psychology, which is present tense, attention to the present tense in psychotherapy and into the theory of psychology, that everything that the client brings to the room is happening in the present tense. So it's focusing very similar to Buddhism, which many psychologies now are interested in, the present tense and how that is influencing choices that a human being makes. So the basics is that we're all human. We're in existence together, which is what globalization is about, and that we all carry the shadow of something called dying with us all through our living. And how do we approach that as we make choices in living? So those are some theoretical concepts, but the actual practice of the therapy has to do with the client and the therapist focusing on the present moment.
Yes, that the focus on the awareness of death, certainly that would seem to echo the part that's existentialist when he talks about it being humanistic existential.
Right. The existential part is the existence, the givens of being a human being. We have basically five tenets in existential therapy, which are we all have a body, we're in a body, we're embodied, we will all die, finitude, and we have those finitudes, those small finitudes all throughout life.
Wait, what's finitude? That's a
finitude
new word.
Means actually, that's the word that Jim used a lot in his theory. Finitude means the ending of something. For instance, the ending of, perhaps for you, when you retired from Sonoma State, that's an ending. It's a type of ending that happens throughout our life, which bears witness to how we will finally end when we finally die, how we serve during those small finitudes, the larger finitude of leaving.
Okay, that was a new word for me. So back to the five. You want to run through them again?
Sure. There's having a body, finitude, being a part of and apart from. We all experience being a part of a group of people, humanity, and we also experience being apart from. For instance, your listeners right now might be drifting off, not hearing everything I am saying or you're saying. So they're apart from, and then their minds, their consciousness will bring them back, and then they'll hear something that touches them and then takes them off. So it's this continuum of being a part of and apart from that operates in every single human being. That's how we are all alike. Another way that we are all alike and we share this alikeness is that we have choices. And it's so interesting to me in my 30-some-odd years of doing psychology and psychotherapy, when I speak to a client, oftentimes they come with a concern. For instance, I'm having trouble with my partner, I am having trouble with my job. Those are very typical cross-cultural concerns in every country and in the United States. So when you ask a person, well, what choices do you have? Many times people will say, I have none. But it is the art of the psychotherapy to bring out in the human being that they actually do have many choices. And that is what is successful in the potential, the humanistic aspect of this model. You're looking at the different choices people have. And then finally, the responsibility that we each take in our own life, that we are entities unto ourselves responsible for every single choice that we make.
Well, you know, I didn't even give you a heads up that we would be talking about this today, and I'm impressed about how easily it rolls off your tongue. So is this your approach today, the humanistic existential approach? Would you say that describes how you're working?
Well, yes and no. The no part is that I'm also highly influenced by transpersonal psychology, and my dissertation, which Jim was the chair of, was in interviewing people who had the experience of hearing voices. I myself had heard one many years ago when a very dear friend of mine had died, and I had a full inner voice experience of his presence 5 years after his death. I became very curious about that phenomenon. I wasn't psychotic. I wasn't schizophrenic. I wasn't on medication. So I interviewed 30 people who we tagged as, and I hate to use this word, normal, but normal being that they were not on medication at that point in life, and they had not been diagnosed with any psychological disorder. And what we found is that people who hear voices, not all people, but a very great, 90% of the 30 people I interviewed did selfless service from hearing voices from inside, that the voice was guiding them to contribute to the culture at large. So my emphasis on existential humanism includes the transpersonal, because I think where humanistic psychology falls short, and has in the past, there's been a criticism of it, is it doesn't place the person back in the culture, back in the world in which they live. So the transpersonal dimension places the person in a larger context of what are they doing here? How are they contributing to the larger good of humanity?
We may pick up on that theme again a little bit later. And, you know, I went to Amazon just to see any publications that you might have out there. And so it's interesting to hear about this dissertation, because I saw all of these people who were citing your work in other books, and I wondered, is this the same Myrtle Heary that I know? And I guess it is, and I think it was referring to that research that you just described, your doctoral research, which is really fascinating.
Yeah, that kind of put me out in the world pretty rapidly. I got a lot of emails from schizophrenics all over the world and quote-unquote normals like myself. And it was a big event for my work at that time.
Yes. Now, in one of his later books, Jim talked about his work as life-changing psychotherapy in contrast to other approaches. But don't all therapists think that they do life-changing therapy? So what's the distinction here?
Well, I think the distinction is short-term versus long-term psychotherapy. And I think we're talking about here long-term psychotherapy of actually changing inner constructs, the subjective part of a human, how they actually go about constructing their life from inside. And I don't think that's possible in short-term therapy. I really don't. I think it's possible to change some ways, some habits, for instance, smoking or arguing with your partner. I think those are very applicable to short-term therapy. But we're talking about looking at how you actually construct your entire view of life from the inside out. It's like a verbal meditation, this type of therapy, where you're actually speaking to your therapist about what's going on in your inner world, and then making some choices and seeing if it's possible through the relationship with the therapist that you can construct new ways of being in the world.
Yeah, I like what you said about it being like a verbal meditation, speaking out loud your awareness, because when I first read some of Jim's books. And at that point, I don't think he was into Buddhism or meditation or anything like that. And it struck me in exactly that way. It seemed very, very Buddhist, very much like a out loud kind of meditation. I think maybe later he came around to seeing it in that light.
Well, that's an interesting subject in itself. We had dialogues together about the soul, the spirit, the transpersonal, mm-hmm. because he was on my committee of hearing voices. And Jim, in many ways, was a very concrete person and is a very concrete person. He does believe and follow the inner guidance, but he's always concerned, well, how is the person functioning in the world? So it was always, he was interested in those concepts, Buddhism, Sufism, all the different religions, but he was very much interested in how God, life is God in itself, which was very helpful to me. And now in my teaching graduate students and undergraduate students, I'm also interested in my students' transpersonal experience, but how is that applying to their life, and how do they see God in the tree? How do they experience their world as a positive world, and how are they going to act in that positive way?
Yeah, there's so much we could talk about around that. Now, you've taught and led workshops all over the world. As a matter of fact, thinking back to our first meeting when I was chair of the department and you came around, or maybe it was a little bit later, I remember you coming and telling me about a program you were running that involved exchanges with Russian mental health professionals. And you've been to Russia a number of times. I remember you brought some Russian psychiatrists and psychologists over who I had an opportunity to meet. Talk a little bit about that experience.
Well, what I did in the late 90s, well, actually, the connection with the Russians started in the early 90s, and I wrote an article for the Humanist Psychology Journal about that, titled Inside the Soul of Therapy, and it was a soul experience going to Russia. How I connected with them is that many of the students there had read Jim's work, and one of his first works was The Search for Authenticity, mm-hmm. The Art of the Psychotherapist. His last book was Psychotherapy Isn't What You Think. They had wanted him to come, but he was unable to go, so I went for him, and we led several different workshops and trained many students there, and many of them came here and visited your university, went to the Evolution Conference of Psychotherapy. So it was a very rich time. And during that time, I became aware of how much psychology was important in the globalization process. So we formed an institute called the International Institute for Humanistic Studies, which is focusing on training, helping professionals, and I want to say that word broadly because we're training hospice workers, nurses, different people who reach out and help other people. It's like taking psychology in a further realm of its possibilities. And we're doing trainings, two-year trainings in different countries, primarily in America right now, California, Arizona, Texas. We're going to start some trainings in Colorado. They're titled Unearthing the Moment. During these two-year trainings, people learn how to communicate in an in-depth, clear communication format with emphasis on compassion, hope, courage, resilience, and tolerance. Those are the five qualities that we're teaching in communication.
I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful, and I see it reaching, all of these students reaching in many different venues. Recently, our focus has also included the concept of aging. So we just yesterday did another seminar, annual seminar on awakening to aging, and it's growing and growing, and more people are not just coming to us for professionals for continuing education units, which we do offer, but they're coming as lay people wanting to know how to age with grace, how to communicate with each other with compassion, and how to make a difference in their community. And last year, I was invited to go to China, where I spoke in two universities, one in Beijing and one in Shanghai. And it was, I would say, the peak of my experience of speaking with students from another nation. I really got why China is cutting edge right now. It felt like to me the days of when we were with JFK and we all had the dreams that we could just do anything. That to me was the experience of what the Chinese students, they can do anything. They had read everything about me on the internet. Mm. They were on their toes with questions, and they were text messaging their buddies in another town as I was speaking. I was speaking in English. I didn't even need a translator, and their questions were so rich. And I just want to share with the audience the one central thing I see around the world when I speak with different audiences is, what would you do about your government in your country? And the consistent message I hear back is, well, we could just function fine without our government. We could do it ourselves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, what an exciting life you are leading doing all of that. Now, you're director of the International Institute for Humanistic Studies. And,
right.
I noticed a couple of times you've used the word globalization, which when a lot of people talk about globalization, it's kind of a dirty word, you know?
People are
upset about many aspects of globalization. Yet when you use it, I sense that you feel there's a positive role for psychology to play in that process.
Absolutely. I really, really do. And I don't think it's a dirty word. I think it's been used as in the trade and the business world and the economic sphere of the world, but not in the world of communication. And that's basically what falls apart every single time, whether you're talking about economy, socialized issues. You're talking about how the two human beings are three or four, they're speaking with each other. So I think that's what psychology has to offer for the universe, is how to speak to each other. That's what we do one-on-one, starting in one-on-one therapy and then working with groups. My course that I teach on group psychotherapy is what I teach at Sonoma State and at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. And I've more and more see that as the venue for psychology working more and more with groups. You see this in business where they're hiring consultants. You yourself have experience in that area. And I just think that area has just begun to open up, and especially using the internet and especially using the computers and being able to speak to people instantly all over the world.
I think
speaking is so critical.
I think that Carl Rogers came to a similar place towards the end of his life, where he was doing a lot of group work and going to different countries.
He was in the Eastern Bloc countries. Some of my personal friends were with him when they did these communication sessions. And those sessions, really, I took from a lot of what I knew through my colleagues that went with him. A basis of our unearthing training is oftentimes what we do with the training with professionals, we don't talk theory. We talk what matters to each human being in the room before we start talking about psychological theory.
Mm-hmm.
So people have an experience together of what matters to them. And Carl did this in the Eastern Bloc countries. Big people in the higher ups of government would sit together for 2 or 3 days talking about what mattered to them, what mattered to them. And then after what mattered to them, they'd take on the big topics of economy, nuclear, the Berlin Wall at that time. Then they could come to some conclusions much more rapidly than they could without the foundation, the existential foundation of how we connect. We connect with each other by, you have children, I have children, how are your kids doing? How is your wife with her aging? How are you with your aging? How is it to have gray hair? We connect that way first with how we are alike. Then we can talk intellectual ideas together.
Mm-hmm. What an exciting process.
It is. It is a very exciting process. I think it's another way of looking at how to resolve not only individual problems, but global problems. Jimmy Carter, during his presidency, did not understand how one of his major treaties that was signed reached its conclusion. And so he gave the tapes from the session to Carl Rogers and his colleagues. And what they found was that these three men who were speaking with each other started speaking about their children, their daughters, and how much they cared for their daughters. Then they went for a walk at Camp David outside. And I'm not clearly sure about all of the intricacies of this, so I don't want to misquote what happened. But the big thing that did happen is that people met on what mattered to them. And I think if your listeners right now would think about really good communications they have with their spouses, their significant others, their children, their people at work, if you first start with talking with what matters to you, you can resolve just about any conflict.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you're teaching a class on careers in psychology because I was a guest speaker just this past week. How are you preparing your students to go into careers in psychology?
Well, I am preparing them by inviting people like you and others to come to the class who are doing things that are different. They're out of the box of how we've seen traditional psychology and psychotherapy. Not to say that that box is not going to continue on. I just think it's going to take on different shapes. I've invited you. I've invited a hospice worker to talk about hospice and death and dying. I've had someone coming who's going to talk on pre- and perinatal psychology, what they're doing, cutting-edge work with birth work. So there's a whole venue of psychology and how it's being applied in the world today that I think is exciting. Students don't just have to think about getting a license. Certainly that's one thing they can do, and that's an important thing to do. But even after they get a license, most licensed therapists have three or four hats they wear, just like yourself and me. And I think those three or four hats are extremely interesting for the students to hear about.
What's your hope for the future? I mean, as we look to the future, it seems like there's a lot of threat of doom and gloom, and yet here you are preparing students to go into that future, and you must have some hope that allows you to do this. What's your positive vision for the future?
Well, I go back to my spiritual training with different spiritual teachers, Irina Tweedy being one. I remember asking her that question, and basically the answer is, if each individual takes some time, quiet time, to look inside and see what is annoying them outside, where it is inside themselves, if they could just take in that part of themselves, own it, work with it inside themselves, and then go back in the world with compassion toward that irritation that perhaps is not an irritation anymore. Perhaps it's something we can all be irritated about, but can have compassion about also. For instance, not being heard correctly. That's a very standard problem in communication all over the world. How many times during the day someone will say to another person, "You didn't hear me right." Okay, fine, then let's stop and hear it right. What was the meaning of what you were saying? Viktor Frankl, a phenomenal existential therapist who worked in the concentration camps in World War II, definitely gave us hope, gave all those people hope. It's that kind of hope. It's the hope that people will connect as individuals with the same humanity and broaden the potential of being human while we're here.
I went onto your website and found a few articles that you've linked to there, and I'll provide those links for my listeners as well. And you made reference in one of them to the spiritual teacher that you just mentioned, Irina Tweedy, was it?
Irina Tweedy, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, did you seek her out before or after you heard that voice?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I was a meditator before I heard that voice.
Mm-hmm.
It was about the time, it was about the time the voice experience happened. Yes, it was soon after that voice experience that I did not seek her. I think the path found me. It's a Sufi path, and it's a path of being in the marketplace as an ordinary person. That's basically what a Sufi in some language is someone in the marketplace doing their work, spreading the spiritual aspect of life in the marketplace. So that force found me, and it was quite a journey finding her physically. In fact, I got quite lost finding her. She was at that time living in London, but finally when I found her, she opened the door and said, "I've been waiting for you."
Wow.
So it was quite a wonderful meeting. And from then on, I spent about 5 years visiting her off and on and being taught by her the ordinary of life and how the spiritual is in everything in the ordinary.
Fascinating. Would it be too intrusive of me to ask what you heard that voice say? It may be too private, and you may not want to speak about it.
No, not at all. I will tell you, my friend who had died was an artist and a writer. He was an Afro-American who had lived in Bern, Switzerland. His name was Vincent Carter, and a wonderful man. And he came to me while I was sleeping, and I was awakened in my sleep, so it was not a dream. I was definitely awake. And he said to me, I have gone nowhere. I have gone everywhere. And I replied, "Vincent, is that you?" And he said, "Yes, listen." And at that point, a very piercing sound started happening. And it was as if something biblical, the sound of the universe, I don't know how to put words on it, but I wept. I started crying. And my husband woke up and he asked me if I was all right. I could not speak. And he said, "What is the sound in this room?"
Wow.
It was a very profound experience, and I do not mind sharing it at all. I'm 100% many people have had very similar profound experiences. It's not about the experience. It is about what you do with it. And that experience has driven me to what I'm doing today. I'm extremely grateful for that experience, that we are everywhere.
So, what's your notion at this point of what happens after this? In other words, after this life?
I am everywhere, and we just had a very dear friend die last week, and I had that experience in the process of his dying, is that he was slowly dying, and I believe, and I have had the experience, I have had a near-death experience in a car accident, that life goes in another form, and it's a beautiful form. The only thing that's really missing is the physical body and the physical touch of people you love and care for. But you go on. I truly believe you go on. You have work to do, and you do it at a different level. And I feel I'm being guided and taught by all those that have gone before me. I think there's a very, very thin veil from being in the body and out of the body, a very thin veil. And we have to take very good care of this gift of being here. It can easily, quickly be taken away. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just that that's a reality that we should hold and take it with vigilance.
Well, as we wrap things up here, I wonder if there are any last words that you'd like to leave our listeners with or anything that we haven't covered that you'd hope to touch upon.
Well, what I'd hope that each one of the listeners listen to your wonderful station, and what you're doing is just cutting edge work. And I in the moment am so appreciative of your following, your voice, of your work and your interest in the internet and this radio. This is such a wonderful venue for people to connect and do exactly what I'm speaking toward, which is having compassion, courage, hope, tolerance, and resilience to everything that's happening in our lives individually and collectively. So thank you for this program.
Myrtle Heary, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
I'm sure you could tell that I like Myrtle Heary quite a bit. She's the kind of person that, well, at least I took an instant liking to. I think she originally hails from Savannah, Georgia, and she has this wonderful, gentle Southern diction and charm. And I really wish I knew her better and that we had the opportunity to spend more time together. After our interview, she mentioned that she thought I'd get along really well with her husband, who's really into computers. So she thinks we'd have a lot in common along those lines. And I have to say, the 2-year certificate program that she described sounds really interesting to me. And it's not a program, I went to their website and it seems like it doesn't require continual enrollment. It's spread out over 2 years, but there aren't really that many meetings. I think there are maybe 4 weekend meetings or something a year. I don't recall the outline of it exactly. I love the title, Unearthing the Moment. What a nice title. I recommend you visit her site. She's got several articles there, 3 short papers actually that I took a look at. And you'll find it at www.human-studies.com. And I'll put a link to that site on my show notes. And also, I want to give you several of the titles that we mentioned of Jim Bugenthal's books, which have meant a lot to both of us. The first is called The Search for Authenticity, An Existential Analytic Approach to Psychotherapy. And that's a very theoretical book, but very good. The second one is called The Search for Existential Identity, which is a set of semi-fictionalized case histories. Very powerful and very revealing. And then he reworked those in a later book called Psychotherapy and Process. But maybe just because I read it first, I greatly preferred the second book, The Search for Existential Identity. But Psychotherapy and Process is shorter, so you might like that one better. I'm not sure. But at any rate, I think you'll really gain by taking a look at that work.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
It's been a while since I've taken time to catch you up on everything that's going on here. First of all, you'll recall that in addition to reminding you that you can save 10% on checkout at GoDaddy.com, by mentioning my secret word of Shrink3 and also promoting our sponsor Pod Show, I've also been promoting the Sony Pictures movie We Own the Night, which came out 2 days ago. Of course, I wanted to see it the very first day it was out. I thought I'd be seeing it with my buddy Dale and that we'd review it together for you. But that didn't work out, and I was eager to see it, so I went off and saw it by myself. And I'll tell you more about it later in the show, but don't worry, I won't give away the plot. I hate it when people do that, when reviewers do that. Does my voice sound different? I hope so, because I bought a new piece of equipment at the Podcast and New Media Expo. You recall that the previous episode consisted of interviews that I did there, and I hope you enjoyed those and that it brought you something of the feeling of being there. At any rate, part of the fun for me of going to an event like that is seeing what new gear and software might tempt me to part with some of my hard-earned money. Well, I plunged big time for something called an Aphex Master Voice Channel 230, which is a lovely piece of hardware with a tube preamp and digital limiter, compressor and de-esser, and more. It's got lots of knobs to twiddle, and I think it's added warmth and presence to my voice. I hope you agree. Please indulge me in my fantasy because I can't take it back. I also saw a demo of some new software that wasn't quite out yet but has since been released, and I was able to download it, and I used it to record today's interview. If any of you are podcasters or podcaster wannabes, I strongly recommend Wiretap Studio by Ambrosia Software. What I've been doing up till now for these Skype interviews is running them through a mixer, along with a mic, to an external digital recorder. A Wiretap Pro not only lets me record the interview on the computer, but also to edit it and get the right balance between the loudness of my voice versus my guest voice, which has been an issue in some past shows. Now, there's other software around that does things like that, but not as elegantly and as simply and as beautifully as Wiretap Studio. This approach really eliminates the need for the mixer and the external digital recorder, so it would make it a lot less expensive. And the software itself is very inexpensive, and I think the sound quality of this particular Skype interview is better than it's been in a long time. You may also recall my excitement when the iPhone first came out, and me asking if I had any listeners yet who were listening on an iPhone, and I did hear from at least two such folks. Well, I've now joined their ranks, and I've been having fun, as well as a little bit of frustration, on the learning curve of that new device. Okay, that's enough about my lust for boy toys. No more tech talk. There's a new episode on my other podcast series, Wise Counsel, and you'll find a new interview there with Dr. Deirdre Barrett of Harvard University. Her book is called Wasteland, and it's about eating. It's about healthy eating. It's spelled W-A-I-S-T, land. Interestingly, I met her at the ASD Dreams Conference a couple of months ago because, among other things, she's a world-class expert on dream research and on hypnosis research, a very, very bright woman. You'll find that interview along with a free written transcript at www.wisecounselpodcast.com. And I also want to remind you of the Shrink Wrap Radio Fan Club on Facebook, and you'll find a link to that at shrinkwrapradio.com. And we finally have some new additions to our Frapper map. We have John from Seattle, Washington, who also contacted me to offer to help me iron out some of the problems with my sound. Hey, how am I doing now, John? And Mark from Fargo, North Dakota, who says, fascinating. Well, thanks, Mark, and I think you're the first listener I've heard from who's from North Dakota. And if you're not on our map yet, there's a place on the Shrink Wrap Radio website where you can add yourself to the Shrink Wrap Radio site where you can add your.
Hi, this is David Gordon from Norfolk, Virginia, at the IASD Dream Conference, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
It's been a while since I've read any emails, and I've got some that I'd really like to share with you. The first comes from Adam in the United Arab Emirates, who writes, Dr. Dave, I've been listening to Shrink Wrap Radio for over 6 months and value your podcasts as an important resource for my own personal and professional development. Technip Abu Dhabi does not give internet access to our approximately 1,500 employees. I would like to request your permission to distribute individual podcasts on CD. This is a step back from RSS feed technology. However, it's an effective way to get around policy and technology obstacles we're facing here. The first podcast I would like to distribute is number 39, Business Consulting with NLP and Love. Three Technip Abu Dhabi employees have recently become Personality Dimensions Level 1 facilitators. And then he said, Mr. Cottrell's story, how NLP guided him onto a new life path, will be inspirational to the Personality Dimensions facilitators. His story will help them to see how Personality Dimensions can give them a new professional life through developing self-awareness in themselves and others. Please find Personality Dimensions presentation attached here for your reference. So this was the initial communication that I received from Adam in Abu Dhabi, and we have since exchanged a number of emails, and also we've spoken on the phone. And it's so wonderful that he has invited me to become a learning partner with Technip, which is a French multinational petrochemical company, and one of their locations is in Abu Dhabi, and he's in charge of sort of professional development for 1,500 people there, and his plan now is to record all Shrink Wrap Radio episodes to CD to distribute to employees there because they don't have good internet access. So I feel so good to that. This treasure trove of content that I've worked very hard to develop is finding a wider audience. And certainly I'm open to any other such offers that might be out there. And was happy to make a formal agreement with Adam and his company so that they could distribute these programs without incurring any liability or anything. And so that's very good news, and I don't know, at some point, I guess the people there in Abu Dhabi will actually be hearing me say this, and I hope to hear from you. I hope you'll send me an email to shrink at shrinkwrapradio.com. The next one comes from Kate, who says, Hi, Dave. I'm one of your listeners, and I never think I have time to listen to your podcast, or else the topic doesn't relate to me. I don't have kids. Why do I want to listen to a show on commercialization to children, etc.? But then I'm drawn into a great show once again, or I end up buying the book and later think, wow, was I wrong? So I'm not sure if you're a great interviewer or if your speakers are great speakers, but whatever you're doing, it seems right on. I'm a, quote, psych cynic. After torturing myself to finish an MA in art therapy 20 years ago, sounds bad, eh? Which was of no use when it came to getting a job. And I realized by then that I did not want to work in a mental health setting anyway. It was too stressful. Times have changed and the field of psychology seems to be more accepting of different treatment approaches, but I still tip my hat to people who are willing to do that difficult work. As for me, I bailed out and became a greeting card designer of all things and paid well, and I'm very happy with the way things turned out. Life is so unpredictable. Listening to your podcast has allowed me to shake off some of the anger I still feel after getting my useless degree, which took forever to pay off. I'm probably more mad at the school for pretending that there are all these great jobs out there, but it's all tied into my overall disappointment with the clinical approach to helping people dealing with their mind. Your podcast has made me, quotes, lighten up a bit, and realize there are great people out there who are dedicated to doing great things, who I want to cheer on, like the man who talked about commercialization to kids. I wonder sometimes if 100 years from now, that history will show that the clinical psychology era will be proven to be false and that Eastern philosophy or meditation is, over 2,000 years old, more accurate in understanding the mind and helping people. For example, I just saw a lecture posted at UC, that's the University of California, that talks about, according to the Theravadan Buddhist texts, self-loathing is actually considered to be very arrogant and self-centered. What a radical view. I can't wait to hear it. Later, keep up the good work. And that's from Kate in Berkeley. Kate, thanks a lot. I also wrote Kate and gave her some feedback. And finally, here's one more that really warmed my heart. It comes from Mexico, and it says, Hi, my name is Rodrigo Ochoa Rubio. I'm a 27-year-old physician from Mexico City with the interest of doing my specialization in psychiatry. I've just discovered your podcasts, read about them in the Scientific American Mind issue of September-October 7, and I have to congratulate you to a big extent. I was very pleased to hear your interviews with so many specialists in so many fields. I particularly enjoyed the one about the commercialization of childhood. It was compelling to hear about the theme because it helps create or enlarge the conscience of the change to improve not just in your country, but worldwide. After all, for the best or worst, we are more and more globalized. If more and more of us become aware of the shortcoming charade of the depredation of human and natural resources, we will promote changes first in our homes, then in our communities, and ultimately in global scale that definitely will yield in long-lasting contributions to our societies and, more importantly, to our planet. At last, I would like to make a couple of big requests, and he capitalizes big, capital B, capital I, capital G, so I better take these very seriously, Rodrigo. Number one, I would like to hear a program about Buddhism, particularly in its approach as a philosophy and a science of the study of the mind. Just as an example, it's overwhelming to realize the results of meditation in anxiety, depression, attention deficit, and many more. Right now, an American Buddhist monk called Alan Wallace is developing the Shamatha Project, a scientific study of the effects of intensive meditation. You can learn about the study, which is being conducted by top scientists, and he gives me the link, the web link, and it's in Santa Barbara, California. It's nearby. It's at sbinstitute.com, if you want to take a look there. And the second is about a novel technique, at least for what I know, he writes, called EMDR, which stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing, which is used for treating psychological trauma. It has been giving good results, worth taking a look at. In short, its aim is in using purposely the eye movements of the patients in order to reconfigure a neural network in the trauma situations. It's very interesting. And also, the BASE Institute is in Watsonville, California. And he gives the web address, www.emdr.com. Thank you very much for considering my request. And I send you a big greeting. Sincerely, Dr. Rodrigo Ochoa Rubio. I hope you don't mind my reading your full name. P.S. I listened to your podcast while watering my garden. So there's a new group of listeners besides the runners and the drivers and so many others. And I got a kick out of that, of you watering your garden and listening to these podcasts. And you must be psychic because I was actually already on the track of EMDR. Several other listeners have requested that I do that. And in fact, this coming week, I will be interviewing Francine Shapiro, who is the founder of that approach, the inventor of that approach. I'll be doing the interview on the Wise Counsel podcast. So all of you who are interested in that, you'll have to go to wisecounselpodcast.com to hear that. And also, I was very gratified, Rodrigo, to hear that you were drawn to the show by that note in Scientific American Mind. I was very excited to get that notice there. And I am continuing to pursue them. I'm trying to get them to do a web swap of web ads. I'd like to put a link to their website on my website and have them put a link to Shrink Wrap Radio. And to do that, I am sending them the results of the listener survey, as a matter of fact, trying to use that as ammunition to persuade them. So I think that'll wrap it up for our email for today. I wanted to say a bit more about the movie We Own the Night, which is now in theaters. I'm wrestling with what I can tell you without giving the plot away. I hate it when reviewers do that. Often when I'm reading the newspaper or I'm watching TV or listening to the radio. Actually, I don't listen to the radio much anymore. It's all podcasts, but I'll turn the sound down just so they can't give it away. So what I can tell you is that if you're the kind of person who liked The Sopranos on HBO or movies about mobsters and the cops who pursue them, then I think this is a movie you'll like. I enjoyed it. Joaquin Phoenix, Mark Wahlberg, and Robert Duvall, they all give strong performances. And I will tell you that there are several sequences that are very suspenseful and had me more or less on the edge of my seat. From a psychological point of view, the film does a pretty good job of depicting the family tensions related to the brother who's the good boy and the brother who's the bad boy and the prodigal son. And that's as much as I'm going to say. Let me know what you think if you do go see it. Thanks again to Dr. Myrtle Heary for a warm and inspiring interview. Our next episode will feature spiritual teachers Nook Sanchez and Tomas Vieira, who has written a new book titled Take Me to Truth, Undoing the Ego. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying it's all in your mind.